If you're a person in your 30s with a constellation tapestry on your wall and a pack of tarot cards on your nightstand, you might be a Cardcaptor fan. Today, on Aging Otakus, we watched Cardcaptor Sakura. Hey everybody, welcome to Aging Otakus, the 90s, 80s, and 70s retro anime podcast. I am your co-host Eric, and with me is my co-host Jorge. How's it going, dude?
Not bad. Survived the, survived all the history that happened this, the first week of the year. So, feeling pretty good about that.
It's been quite a year, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a whole year in a week. So, if you're an internet archaeologist in like the year 3020 finding this podcast, we made it.
I mean, did we though? I don't know. Who knows?
So far.
Yeah, we don't know what the rest of 2021 is. That's one of the things I was thinking about since New Year's was like, if you've been online, you kind of have this sort of notion that once 2020 is over, it's back to normal. We're all good to go. You know, one bad year out on the books and it's smooth sailing. But it's like, maybe just because we are now older and we're all established adults and, the internet is a thing. Like, this is just the way life is from now on. Like, it's just going to be year after year is a bad year.
Plugging that computer in and starting the internet was a mistake.
Well, maybe that's just something our parents dealt with too, but just never mentioned it. Like, maybe like every year is just terrible consecutively for them as well. I don't know. It's just a weird thing I was thinking of. I was like, I guess this is growing up.
There we go. This is growing up. This is why we love looking backwards in time at simpler times and, colorful characters and whatnot. Maybe, I don't know. Are we trying to make like a deep thesis point about our podcast?
I don't know. I'm just waxing poetic cause I've had a glass of scotch. So I don't know. Or I guess I've had a glass of bourbon.
But like a beer glass of bourbon.
it's a highball. One of my buddies for Christmas, he left something because I'm watching his dogs. He's got like 20 dogs, and I'm watching his dogs right now. And so he left me a little gift set of a Woodford Reserve Kentucky bourbon and a nice little glass. And so I'm just having a little sip of that right now, and it's real smooth.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. What have you been up to this week, Jorge?
Other than just doom scrolling, I started the DBZ Kakarot game that came out last year. It's been sitting in my backlog a little bit, and I gotta say it's not the most similar game I played recently would probably be Final Fantasy VII Remake, and that's a really unfair.
What?
That's a really unfair comparison to make because DBZ Kakarot is no Final Fantasy.
That's the one where it's sort of like it's you just play out the series, but from the point of view of specific characters, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's an action RPG. You play through the original Dragon Ball Z sagas, and then the DLC are like Dragon Ball Super stuff.
Oh, and interesting. I don't like that.
Yeah. It's fun. I would say the combat system is a little. That's simple. It's kind of limited. But it's all right.
It's like Budokai kind of.
I've heard it's a little similar to like Xenoverse, which I haven't really played or like some of the other, like it's like one of those, 3D flying around fighting games where you're locked onto the other character and you could do like, key attacks and like homing attacks and whatnot. They kind of like transplanted something similar to that. The thing that really trips me up is they made, I'm playing on the PlayStation 5. They made a square the ranged attack and they made circle the melee attack, which is so reverse from everything I'm used to in every other game.
Okay.
And there's no like remapping or alternate control schemes or anything. So I get like a really cool opening and I just like faintly throw a little like key blast out of my hand instead of like an awesome like punch to the face or whatever. Cause I keep getting crossed up in that way. So, but besides those little like quirks and whatnot, if, you know, if you're looking to like kind of relive a little bit of that storyline, I mean, it's been probably a decade or more since I've watched Dragon Ball Z in earnest, like not just one of the movies for the podcast or Dragon Ball Super or whatever. You know, if you catch it on sale or something, pretty cool little like curiosity. If you just want to like relive the story and not sit through all the filler, or like if you don't have the manga or whatever, worth checking out.
How's it look though? Does it look like I remember seeing it's very like cel shaded kind of, so it looks more accurate to the cartoon.
Yes, yeah. So it's not as pretty as Dragon Ball Fighter, Dragon Ball Fighters or Fighter Z.
Yeah, Fighter Z. Yeah.
It's not as pretty as that, because I also have that game. But I'm blanking on the name of the developer, but I do know they have really good experience with cel shading and making 3D stuff look 2D. And
is it a Bandai game? I think it's a Bandai game.
For Kakarot, it's Cyber Connect 2 developed Kakarot, which I think they do like Dot Hack and some of the, like Naruto games. So, you know, they're established with like action RPGs. But
they do all the Naruto Shippuden fighting games.
Yeah, they do the fighting games and some of the like action RPGs that the Naruto action RPGs, which I've heard is where they took this control scheme from. So, but I've never played any of those, so I am struggling, but I'm having fun. Yeah. So
that's good.
I'm willing, and I just want to go through the story again. I mean, they obviously cut a lot of things out for time, and then they add other things that are a little more side questy, but it's fun to bump into like, you know, like Garlic Jr. is just in the open world somewhere, like I'm flying around as Piccolo and he's just kind of like, dude, leave me alone, I'm scheming here. Like,
interesting. Okay.
It's a fun little like nod to the fans, and there's a lot of little things like that so far.
Have you done the Goku and Piccolo driving yet?
No, I'm still in the Saiyan saga, so not yet, but I'm excited, and I hope they wear their the outfit, or I hope Piccolo wears the outfit.
Yeah, the post boy streetwear icon outfit. Yeah.
The you know, 2020 starter kit for streetwear. Mm-hmm.
God, I know of people, like friends of friends, who start like those kind of streetwear anime brands.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how they don't get sued, but
I've ordered from some of those, like, I mean, mostly just black t-shirts, because I have a lot of black band t-shirts and a lot of black wrestling t-shirts, and so it kind of fits in that scheme.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm surprised, because I mean, they make some really cool designs, but they're like blatant IP ripoffs. Violations. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No. I usually kind of stay away from those kinds of things. Like I'm a cool guy, Jorge. So I don't really wear a lot of anime shirts, but I do and I don't. I have like 4 Gundam shirts, but I kind of stay away from the Instagram homegrown brands. But there's this really cool Berserk shirt that I want, where it's the cover of Metallica's Kill 'Em All, but it's instead of a hand with a hammer, it's a Guts's hand and the Dragon Slayer sword from Berserk.
Oh, that is great.
And I want it very badly, and I'm very close to getting it every time I see it.
That's a great album cover to riff off of. I actually have a sticker on my water bottle right now. Same album cover, but it says Mechagodzilla instead of Metallica.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's, nice. And it's just like a Mechagodzilla and like the blood, you know, there. So yeah, no, that's, you should do it.
I'll send you a link. I'll send you a picture of it. It's very cool. I'm so tempted to get it. I've like had it in my cart like 3 times so far, like in the last year or so.
That's how they get you.
Yeah, right.
With the Dragon Ball, with playing Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, like it uses a fair bit of the original series music, which just reminded me of how awesome that score is. The Japanese one. I mean, the American one has a place like that's near and dear in my heart as well. but it's very different than the original. And so that got me into kind of this like wormhole on YouTube, and I started listening to the Dragon Ball Super Broly movie soundtrack, which like absolutely slaps and has a couple of really like the Broly versus Goku and the Broly versus Gogeta fight songs, like fucking get you pumped. Like put that on your really? Workout playlist. Like please. Oh yeah.
I haven't seen that movie. Yeah. Have you seen it? Like the movie itself?
Oh yeah. So I'd forgotten that particular soundtrack was so good because I saw it in the theater, but I kind of like, I took too much of an edible when I saw it.
Hell yeah.
And I was in this like way too big, like deep leather, like reclining theater seat. For that movie. So I mean, I enjoyed it, but the only thing I remember was like really peaking on that edible when there's just a scene where like Broly punches like the color off of the universe, basically. Like,
oh, okay.
He punches so hard that like there's like just the colors, like it's like the best use of that effect in anime, because you know how that happens. It'll be like a fight or like a big energy blast or whatever, and everything kind of turns black and white.
Right. Yeah. It just encompasses everything else.
Like, yeah. Like it. Yeah. It was the best use of that because it's like just slightly different than the usual. So, and I was just like super high, and I'm just like, is this the movie? Is this me? Am I transcending? Like, what's happening here?
You've got the galaxy brain happening to you.
I'm in the like seventh plane of watching anime in a movie theater.
Nice.
So yeah. If you haven't seen that, you definitely it's fun. It's a fun like redo of that story, and I guess it's canon now, which is kind of cool.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean I know that none of the Dragon Ball Z movies were canon, but I really loved the Broly movies. Like my favorite Dragon Ball Z movie, I think, is the one where it's Goten and Trunks against like clone Broly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's just those two fighting him, and it's just a giant man kicking the shit out of like 2 6-year-olds for like 25 minutes.
Living the dream. And then other than that, I would say the other big time killer this week, which I think all people who are listening to this probably would overlap with a bit interest wise. So I stumbled onto the Action Button review of Tokimeki Memorial on YouTube. And so an Action Button is Tim Rogers, who used to write for Kotaku.com. And
yes.
He's the like Japan-based guy, doing a lot of like, you know, anime and like game reviews and cultural, like personal essays and stuff. And so this Tokimeki Memorial review, so it's a PlayStation like dating / life sim from 1994, 95-ish. There's different like re-releases and stuff, so there's different dates. But it's a 6-hour like review, like deep dive about this game, and but also it's kind of like a personal essay. And he had played this game previously, like in his youth, so he does a little bit of reminiscing with that. He talks a lot about just like the video game design and theory that goes into all of this. And there's like 2 Let's Plays in the middle of it, which he recommends, like if you're not interested in that part, you can just skip ahead to more of the like essay part afterwards. Mm-hmm. But he does like a full playthrough blind, trying to get a specific girlfriend by the end of the game.
Oh god.
Because well, and here's a really interesting thing, because my initial reaction was just, you know, that same, you know, oh god, like it's actually like a pretty wholesome game.
Okay.
Because he has a really, he goes into a bit of like how kind of, especially like as Westerners, like we've kind of othered a lot of like Japanese media and our expectations, like, oh, that's going to be like pervy, or that's going to be wacky, or that's going to be weird. Other than like a select few things that we've kind of like okayed into like our canon. And,
to be fair though, there is a lot of pervy stuff.
Yes. But there is much more that we don't hear about that is just,
right.
That's not, and it's, I would say like the whole point of like this particular game, it's a lot of in a not in a not sad, like he's convinced me it's like in a not sad way, but in a more just like reflective way. It's about kind of like reliving high school now that you have more life experience and you can be a more compassionate and like kinder and better person.
Okay. Yeah.
I still haven't finished the review. I've been listening to it in chunks, and it's, I just think it's a fantastic format. He has a bunch of other like multi-hour long reviews. He's trying to go from, he's trying to draw a line from Final Fantasy VII Remake to Cyberpunk 2077 in terms of like influences and like game design and stuff. And he's done it between then and between FF7R and when he gets to Cyberpunk, he's done like Doom already. He's done like the original Doom. He's done Pac-Man. And Tokimeki Memorial. I think he may have done like a few more. But yeah, if you, I mean, obviously you're listening to this, you like to listen to nerds talking about things that they have opinions about and enjoy. And so if that sounds at all interesting to you, I highly recommend you just, yeah, you set aside a couple little chunks of time and give it a try.
Yeah, I saw your tweet regarding that large video, because I think when you posted it, it was something to the effect of, you know, like I'm trying to be productive, but I'm now watching this 6-hour long review of a 1994 video game for the PlayStation 1.
Right.
And I was very interested because it caught my eye. I was like, ooh, well, I love anime things. I love 90s PS1 anime things. So yeah, that'd be interesting. I might give that a listen myself.
If it had been an hour long, I feel like I would have ignored it. But the fact that it was 6 hours long, I'm like, and I was already kind of like vaguely familiar with Tim Rogers. I'm like, okay, like, there's gonna be like some good reason that this is 6 hours long.
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting, and I just, whenever I think of like dating sims, I just think of like Doki Doki Literature Club. So I'm kind of adverse to it.
Right. Which he mentions because this is like not like one of the earliest ones, but it's an earlier
right
dating sim, and he gets into why like dating sim probably isn't also 100%. An accurate title
either. Right.
I very much have enjoyed my, you know, like 3 hours or 3 or 4 hours so far.
Yeah, no, I'll probably take a look at that, because you know me, I'm like, the only media I take in is YouTube, so I'm sure I will find my way there eventually. As for my stuff this week, nothing aside from, I like I said last week with our last episode, I've been playing this game called Escape from Tarkov. It has since consumed my life. I'm very much into it. I'm playing it for multiple hours a day. It's one of those games where I'm very like stoic when I play video games. I'm usually just sitting there with my mouth open, but EFT is making me like scream out loud, and it's making me rage, and it's making me, you know, like jump, because I'm so immersed in it. So I've been playing a lot of that, and I love this strange Russian military sim that's kind of taking up all of my time.
What kind of specs does it need? Can I put boot camp on my like MacBook Pro?
I mean, MacBook Pro, probably not. I think it's probably comparable to like COD Warzone, but just like dumbed down a little bit, because it's not like, oh, wow. It's not a battle royale where you are playing with like 120 people. It's, I think you're playing with like up to like 11 people on the same map, plus randomly spawning like AI mobs and player controlled mobs. So, you know, it's not really like labor intensive for a PC that's like maybe like a mid grade. But yeah. Dude, if you can, throw it on a MacBook and try it out. It's awesome. I don't know if you... I don't know. But now that you say you're going to put boot camp on there, probably not, because you're going to have to run a VM, and that's a whole thing.
Well, so. Boot camp's without the VM, so that's a direct...
Oh, it's not?
Yeah, that's a direct...
Oh, that's right. You're just switching right from OSs, right?
Yeah. So I'll investigate, because that sounds fun.
Dude, it's crazy, because it's like... It's a game where one of the biggest mechanic... is not, if like you can be like a top CS player or a top COD player, but if you don't know the maps and how they work, or if you don't have like, if you're not listening, because like a major mechanic of the game is listening. Oh. And you have to wear like headsets out on your character, which amplify like ambient sounds around you.
Oh.
To kind of get any kind of edge. Like you have to know where somebody is before they know where you are. So a lot of times it's like you running around is going to get you killed very quickly because everyone's very quiet and they're listening to where things are positionally to themselves. And it's so, I'm going to send you a video of it. Like after we're done recording, it's a very interesting game.
Awesome. Yeah. It sounds thrilling. Again, like it just that sense of like that survival, that like real uh-huh. sense of survival. I feel like that really like calls to me.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to be like hyperbolic at all, but it's like there's nothing like it. I mean, maybe like Rust, I guess, would be kind of like that, but I think in terms of like a setting a mood and having to use like quote unquote like real world tactics, like in terms of like shooting and stuff like that, like it's there's nothing like it. But taking a right turn from that, the other thing I wanted to talk about this week was it's a Twitter account, and I don't know if you follow it. It's called Dudes Who Are Down Bad. Have you heard of that?
I've seen it. It was probably you, actually. I've seen people liking it and it popping up in my timeline. So yeah.
Yes. So Dudes Who Are Down Bad, or at Down Bad Patrol on Twitter. It's a collection of user submitted screenshots of dudes shooting their shot with girls and then just getting crushed in the most beautiful of ways.
Oh.
You know, it's just kind of, it's just stupid Twitter memes, but I love the schadenfreude of it all. So that's another thing that I've been kind of taking in a lot of this week.
It's some good cringe.
But Jorge, unless you have anything else, you want to get into the show?
Let's go.
So as you guys know, today we will be covering season 1, episode 1 of Cardcaptor Sakura. It was an anime that ran from 1998 to 2000. It was based on the 1996 to 2000 manga by Clamp, which is an all-female manga collective group. It's a very distinct style. If you've seen any of the Clamp productions, you would know it. It's things like Cardcaptor Sakura, X, or Magic Knight Rainearth. You know, it's sort of Naoka Takeuchi-esque, where everyone's really tall and really beautiful.
Yeah, a lot of lank.
Yes, very. Yeah, everyone in here is a lanky motherfucker. They've got really big eyes, really, really tight chins. It's sort of like that definitive 90s anime style, I think.
That,
right?
Like for lack of a better term, that definitive 90s girl anime look,
mm-hmm.
Which... You know, for good reason. Like, it's not, we're not being like, we're not being dismissive or anything. It just,
oh no, no,
they're definitely it like shoujo manga, yeah. But yeah,
yes, yeah, it's an art style that's been, you know, replicated and copied by a lot of its contemporaries. But I mean, that's because it's a really popular and a really well received series and manga. So you know, it's not, we're not dissing it. It has its place.
It's pretty,
yeah. I mean, especially, like, we'll go into it later. I mean, you know, as I was watching this, I didn't realize it until we were doing the research. I was like, this animation's really good. And then I look into it, and I'm like, oh, it's Studio Madhouse. Of course it's really good.
Like, does this ever get, like, crappy? No, it doesn't.
No. It was adapted by Nelvana in 2000, which is that production company for the U.S. where the polar bear and the star thing. You may know it as Cardcaptors. Which I think it was on what, WB or?
Yeah.
It was WB, Kids WB.
Kids WB, yep. And then Toonami at some point.
Yeah, so I know that it was kind of criticized by the anime community for being heavily edited. Sort of like the Dragon Ball Z treatment, or the, I guess more similarly, the Neptune and Uranus whitewashing of, you know, gay characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that happens in this, which is, I mean, it's an anime excluding one couple. It's an anime with, like, you know, 10-year-old kids. Like, it's like, oh, I like this girl. And it's like, well, I don't like her sexually. It's just, I like this person.
Right.
We were
a long way in 2000 from stuff like Steven Universe, for sure.
Oh, true. Oh, God, Steven Universe is so good. But yes, you're right. So, you know, episodes were reworked in order. I think they were trying to create new relationships with certain characters to kind of be more quote unquote acceptable for American audiences. New theme song, things like that. I know that you looked into it and NIS America licensed the series and re-released the series unedited and kept the English audio tracks. Is that right?
Yeah. So it was NIS America, Nipponichi Software America, the game company that does like Disgaea and like
all those. I love Disgaea. Yeah.
All those very weeby, like fun strategy RPGs and such. They, mm-hmm. I didn't realize they had a anime licensing arm, and they released the version that you find on like Crunchyroll and Netflix now, which is a new dub, and or you can watch it subtitled.
So did you watch, we agreed that you would watch it subtitled, correct? Or we both watched it on Netflix?
Yes, subbed, yep.
Okay, yeah, of course, okay. I know also that we've got in the notes that the American Family Association complained on its website.
Which is like one of those, you know, those organizations that just exist to complain about things.
Yeah, it's usually one of those organizations who complains about standards and American values and, you know, probably gives a lot of money to certain churches, things like that. But to be fair, though, I mean, like, this cartoon does have a lot of occult references in it. Not that I'm defending the American Family Association at all, by any means. And because of that, I guess a marketing campaign by Taco Bell ended because of the uproar that the AFA kind of caused.
Well, they said it ended, but I guess they issued an announcement on like February 1st that like we took down Taco Bell. They're not gonna have the card captor toys with their, you know, with their kids meals anymore. Like, we did it. This is a victory for America and yada yada. And then it turns out like even the original announcement of when these toys would be discontinued said January 31st. So.
So they were 2 months late.
They were claiming a victory that wasn't theirs. Like, yeah.
You know, Jorge, a far right movement claiming victory when it wasn't earned speaks volumes to today, I think.
You know who else claimed victory? Oh, no, we're not gonna.
Yeah, the more things change, the more they stay the same, I think. So, do you remember what the toys looked like at all, or did you look into any of that?
Yeah, they were just like your standard fast food toys, like just the a character on like a base with like the logo.
Yeah, nothing crazy.
So if anyone still has their, you know, mint and box Sakura toy, please send us a shout on
reach
on
out Twitter. To Jorge on Twitter. He will buy it from you for $150 guaranteed.
When I say mint, I mean mint. Like, yeah. I'm a demanding collector.
Of course. So do you have anything to say about the legacy of Cardcaptor Sakura at all as a whole, or
yeah, so
did you look at any of that?
So I found that, so first off, like, there are two movies produced based on the series. The first one takes place during the story events of the series, and another one is a follow-up to the end of the series. So it kind of acts as a finale, a little like end cap over everything. In 2016, Clamp actually released a sequel in manga form, Cardcaptor Sakura Clear Card, and that got a anime adaptation in 2018. And I believe that is also on like Crunchyroll and Netflix and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And now, While it was running, it also inspired about 10 video games, a lot of like adventure, like RPG games or like visual novel, like kind of stuff for a bunch of like the portable systems, so really simple stuff. But also like I was kind of surprised, like the Dreamcast, PS2, PS1, like real, you know, real ass actual video games and not just
press not that baby shit.
Yeah. Interestingly, and this may be kind of a fun follow-up down the line for us, Clamp released another series called Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle, and it actually uses the same character, like modified character designs and the same, but they're, you know, they have the same names, in a different story with Ciaran being the lead character instead of Sakura. But it's the same.
Oh, so it's like an alternate universe, or
yeah, it's like an alternate universe, or like it sounded really intriguing. I don't want to dig too much into it because I feel like that might be a cool future episode. Yeah. But it was actually known as Clamp's first story that targeted young boys rather than young girls.
Okay.
So that was, and which kind of explains the change of like lead character.
Right. So it's like their first foray into trying to do a shonen manga.
Right.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. I mean, it probably led to, you know, down the line. I mean, they provided the designs for Code Geass for Sunrise. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that was a, you know, if you could draw a line from that point A to point B for that.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, to see that. Have you ever seen Clamp's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure characters?
No. Oh, that's gonna be interesting.
It's seen as an abomination, or maybe it's one of those abominations you love, like by the JoJo community, where it's like it's Jotaro Kujo, but he's a Clamp character. Which, I mean, at the time, like the Araki designs of like the first three series are very just giant masculine, like Kenshiro esque men.
Yeah, they're like inverted triangles, basically, with a head on top. Yeah.
100%, and their shoulders are like built like tires, and yeah, this is like it's imagine like Jotaro, but he looks like, you know, Tuxedo Mask, and in the community it's sort of seen as like bad because there's like a Jotaro's stand, which is Star Platinum. There is like a baby version of it, or there's a baby version of Jotaro, which is like his son, but it's like just a character they made up. But the fan community has made it due to like a sort of a yaoi ship between Jotaro and Kakyoin, that Kakyoin has had Jotaro's egg baby, and like he laid an egg. Oof. And that's what this Clamp character is.
Oh,
it's a whole weird thing, but it's like if you've been in the trenches of the JoJo community like I have, it's you see it every now and then.
Oh god.
Okay. Yeah, it's very weird. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean I don't know what else to say. It's an egg baby.
It's an egg baby, you know, as it's just totally a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's no egg baby, but I did see this. It was actually pretty critically acclaimed of series overall. It got a Seiyun Award for Best Manga in 2001, and the TV series got the Animage Grand Prix Award for Best Anime in 99. So, you know, those are pretty big honors.
Yeah, critically acclaimed.
Eric, did you ever watch it in before this in any form, the dub or subbed or?
Yeah. I watched the Cardcaptors dub on WB as a kid. I don't think it ever kind of really resonated with me. I never was a fan of it, but I didn't like hate it or anything. Because I mean, I was a kid who liked Sailor Moon a lot, and you know, it's like, and so I was like, oh, it's a magical girl anime. One of the things that kind of I appreciated of it was the fact that Sakura's outfit changes every time in every episode. So whenever she does her transformation sequence, it's like a totally different outfit, but it kind of still maintains certain themes that go with it. And so, though I wasn't a fan, I always thought that was like a nice little detail, because I always enjoy when like syndicated anime is like kind of give a shit when they're in production. So.
Right. Like even back then, you knew that meant that they cared a little more, or that they were...
Right, yeah. They're not just reusing things... Exactly. Yeah, it's not like Doug, where he's just wearing the same thing every single episode, you know?
Doug has a disorder. I don't know.
Yeah, so does everybody else in Bluffington, though, because they all wear the same shit every day. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. I'm sure, yeah, Doug is a very anxious teen.
He needs routine. Same. I definitely did remember watching it on Kids WB between other shows. I never... It was probably the show where I would, like, kind of... During it, I would double check that, like, oh, I've got some like homework, or I've got to take care of some stuff in the house or whatever. So I don't have like a lot of strong memories about it, other than maybe like the intro and the just a couple of like overall like scenes and whatnot. But Yeah, like same. Like I remember it seemed decent for how much I paid attention to it and watched it. And same, like I was also a fan of Sailor Moon and a lot of those like more traditionally like feminine anime, and it seemed like a really good example of it at the time. But also it does help that it was what, like a year or two old by the time we got it versus a lot of the other anime we were getting then that was already like a decade old. So it,
yeah,
it looked a lot better.
Yeah. That's the thing. It was like when it was right at that moment, like 2000, where, you know, they were like, oh, there's money to be made in anime. Like, let's get it as soon as possible. Not, you know, 10 years after the fact. So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Going to Sailor Moon though, who was, as a kid, your favorite Sailor Scout?
Ooh, probably Venus.
Venus. Okay.
Maybe Mars. I did like Mars.
I was a kid. I liked Mercury because I was like, oh, she's cool and techie, and she's smart. She's gonna be a doctor in Germany. but as an adult, as a grown man, I love Jupiter because she. Like myself, thirsts for physical combat. That resonates with me.
Jupiter's like the really tall one too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The green.
So going into the episode, did you want to go over the OP that was on this ep?
All right. So we open the show with the opening theme, "Catch You, Catch Me" by Gumi. It's just this like poppy, bubbly, fun, super catchy like J-pop song with little like scenes of Sakura and like the different people in her life popping in, and we just hear like flying around, like running around, just generally being a magical girl. Before we get to like what I think, what did you think, Eric? Like
I haven't this is the first episode I've seen of Cardcaptor Sakura as a Japanese version, and I'd never heard this OP, and at first I was like, you know, the OP is it's fine, and then the kind of the chorus hits and I was like, yeah, this is very good. It's a very good J-pop, like it's a good OP.
That's so good.
I was very happy with it, and then, you know, it's like it's colorful and cute and it's a nice cast of characters and, you know, all that. I was pretty happy with it.
For me, like, because I had heard it before, and when I was watching, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I have watched like an episode in Japanese or at least just heard the intro or something. For me, it has the effect of if you've seen the episode of Seinfeld where they meet up with Elaine's dad, and George keeps singing this, he has a song stuck in his head from Les Mis, and at the end of the episode, it's stuck in Elaine's very grumpy dad's head as well, and he's like singing along to it.
Oh, okay.
I've just like caught myself like singing like catch you catch me da, da, like, uh-huh, while like cleaning up in my kitchen earlier tonight and stuff. Like
it's, oh, that's cute. Yeah, it's very earwormy.
It's wriggled its way in there. So
uh-huh.
I don't know if we ever have some kind of like opening theme award or something, this would be a high, you know, like up there runner for sure.
We should do one of those. Well, yeah, we'll. I mean, we got to do our Norris Packard Award,
yeah,
and that's all it's ever been called.
we do anime Grammys.
Yeah, we should do like an anime. Yeah, the Age of Gotaku Yearly Awards. I don't know. We'll think of a stupid name for it. But yeah, I think out of the episodes that we've been watching, this is definitely in there for me too.
Mm-hmm. And so from that very catchy intro, we're taken to Tokyo. We see this like over, you know, like behind the shoulder, like overhead sort of view of Tokyo. Before that, we actually first, like, we see like these almost like round like waves emanating out from the in circles from the center, and like an outline of a girl that's sleeping. And then we switch over to that view of like Tokyo, and there's like a pink cloaked figure on a rooftop, and she's looking at the Tokyo Tower. And I mean, she almost looks like a pastel Batman. To me, just that pose with the cape.
Yeah, true.
The cape kind of blowing in the wind. And we pan up and we see our, you know, Sakura and her little mascot, her little buddy, Kerberos.
Right. Okay. So it's Kerberos, and I also read it on the doing research for it is just in the manga it's Cerberus.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where it's like the Greek reading of Cerberus would still be like Kerberos. I guess the C is always like a K sound or something. But like you know, like in English we say Cerberus, but I don't know. I'm also hoping I'm not starting like some kind of like anime pronunciation drama either, because
I want to start that anime pronunciation drama.
Teach the controversy, you know.
Yeah, I'll probably just call him Kiro because they shorten it to Kiro.
They do, yeah, yeah. They call him Kiro a lot. And so we see them, you know, pans up. We see them, and she does the like heroic leap into the city below. And we just get the title card of the episode, which is Sakura and the Strange Magical Book.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I didn't think about it until you said it, but yes, that intro was very Batman.
Yeah, surprisingly. I didn't...
Right.
I did not expect it. And so from there, we see Sakura wake up to her beeping alarm, and in the narration, she's kind of narrating her day and introduces herself and her family. We learn she's a fourth grader. She likes PE and music. She hates math. She's very energetic.
Hey, you and me both. Yeah. It was almost like it's like, you know, my name is Yusagi Tsukino. I'm 14 years old. I'm a Gemini. That's sort of Sailor Moon introduction.
Yeah. It felt like a very, like, I haven't read the manga or anything, but it felt like an adaptation of, in, you know, in comics and manga, the thought bubbles or the thought narration boxes in Western comics a lot. I felt like their take of that, where there's like a version of Sakura that's just narrating her stuff, like that knows what's happening.
And so, yeah, right. She's talking directly to you, like she knows she's in a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool. And so she introduces Toya, her older brother, who's enjoying some coffee and just kind of like razzing her and teasing her like an older brother is wont to do.
You know what, Jorge? I'm going to stop you again. I'm sorry. You know what Clamp is doing here, right? You know what Clamp is doing.
Yeah? What are they doing?
They're yaoi baiting us.
Oh, yeah.
With
oh.
Sakura's handsome brother.
Oh, yeah.
And her hot dad.
Well,
you...
Yeah.
It's a Clamp production, so of course.
Yeah, from the twisted mind of Clamp.
I just imagine some yaoi with her dad and her brother with some huge hands, some huge yaoi hands. Their
broad shoulders.
Yeah.
Their lovely lips. No, that was a when there's like a shot, like when we first see the brother, where I'm just thinking like they know what they're doing. Like they're yeah. Yeah, I don't think I went straight to the yaoi part immediately. Uh-huh. I did get there, but when I just seen the brother, I was like, oh no, they know their audience.
Yeah, I was like, these dudes are hot.
So we kind of get our, and I was surprised to see more instances of this kind of stuff, but we get our like first our first slapstick kind of like moment. We get this little like cutaway, and she's imagining herself like stomping on her brother because she's like, well, I'll be the big sibling someday and that'll show him. And it's just like this really wacky, like cartoonishly big sneaker, like stomping on her brother. And then we see her dad, and her dad is a professor of archaeology, a great cook. And, he's very handsome. He's a zaddy for sure. We also learned that her mom passed away when she was three. So it's just the three of them in the house. It was just like a sweet little like authentic roundup of her family. It was nice. It was just a nice little.
And it goes against like the anime norm too. It's like, you know, it's always an anime, at least from a shonen man anime. It's always, you know, the father's out of the picture.
Right.
You know, and this is like a kind of a subversive take on that kind of, you know,
the trope. The family is very essential to the story. I would guess as it goes on, but it does seem like they are so far.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And so she just kind of like rushes through her breakfast and makes this really silly face when she sees that her brother is leaving earlier than she expected. So she skates off to catch up with him because she kind of has a crush on his best friend. And so she even skates through like the cherry blossoms with the dropping petals,
of course,
which felt like really on the nose because they're, you know, like sakura blossoms.
Right.
And her, you know, like we kind of hear her inner monologue, and she's excited to see Yukito, her brother's friend, and her brother even like embarrasses her by pointing out how fast she had her breakfast. She's kind of like gushes, and like, she has this little like, you know, like childhood crush on someone that's like slightly older than you, 'cause you think they're so cool and like, oh my God. And so she even feels like that little tinge of like, oh, I'm so sad I don't get to spend time with you anymore now that you're dropping me off at class and you got to keep going to high school. So it was just, again, like just cute, authentic, like little like childhood things.
Yeah. And she doesn't even, because she's too young to realize that her brother and his friend, they are in love with each other.
Right. They don't set that up yet, but they do.
Yes.
The body language is not aggressively so, but it is. Like, it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he, as she's dropped off, Yukito kind of tosses her a candy. And when she arrives at the school, and one of the things I kind of set aside was that, like, when Yukito throws her this chocolate, she kind of has a shot of her opening up her hands to kind of look at it. And it's very kind of, you didn't need to do that. Like most animes, like it's just an open shot of her hands and her holding it.
It's very smooth.
You didn't need to animate that. It's very, exactly. It's very smooth. Another thing that kind of caught my eye is when she kicks Toya's shin with the rollerblades when he's making fun of her. Like, it's just a quick shot of the action. It's maybe like three frames, but it's very well done. It's like, you don't really need to do that in a anime where, in an industry where you're kind of supposed to encourage to be cutting corners. It was like a labor of love that they kind of had these little quick little shots that weren't necessary, but kind of bring more flavor to the animation.
Yeah, no, and I mean, we're probably going to keep pointing this out as we go, but the animation quality is one for a TV anime is fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's very clean. The lines are very sharp. Everything is on model, for at least that I've noticed in this episode. It seems like the production company kind of kept the budget at a high standard throughout the whole thing. You know, you kind of notice that sometimes where kind of characters are kind of off model, like towards the end of an episode. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're kind of cutting more corners and it's starting to feel a little lazy. You don't get it from this. Like, it's very crisp and clean animation throughout. So since Sakura has now arrived at school, we're introduced to her friend, Tomoyo. And she's teasing Sakura about this very obvious crush that she has on Yukito. As we're introduced to Tomoyo, we find out that she is, you know, like the daughter of a wealthy business owner. Her hobbies include photography and videography. She kind of is like a documentarian in the making. One of the things that we find out is one of her favorite subjects is Sakura herself. She's very into Sakura. She thinks that she's, you know, Sakura's like the cutest girl in the world and she wants to take pictures of her.
She's so cute.
Yeah, it's a very cute little, it's a cute little friendship that they've got going on here. As she's going through the day of school, we kind of see that she's sort of like, she's a little spacey when it comes to more like academia, but you know, in terms of athleticism, Sakura is very athletic. She's doing backflips and baton twirling. But she's still like a little bit of a klutz. So she'll, you know, she's twirling. And that, oh, and so the baton twirling animation also got me as well. Like, you know, they actually, it's her hand moving the entire time and having the baton sort of like balance on her hand as she kind of restarts the twirling motion.
Yeah, it's not her hand turning into like a pinwheel and
exactly.
Yeah, no, it's each movement.
Yeah, it's a fully animated movement of the hand, and you understand it, and it's very nuanced and it's very subtle, but it's like these things kind of matter, at least in the more discerning anime eye, I guess.
For the discerning fan.
Yeah, for the discerning anime fan. But so as she's twirling this baton, she kind of has this flashback to this dream that she had where she sees this big wand. And that's where it kind of falls and hits her on the head. After school, she gets home and her father leaves a note saying that he'll be late and that, you know, he's not going to be home. She starts to hear concerning sounds like an intruder's in the house, but it's sort of more of like an animal kind of growl. And so she starts to make her way to the basement and she doesn't know where the sound is coming from, but she can't seem to find any sort of intruder. And she sees this glowing book called The Clow. And it's got like this sort of winged tiger on it. And it's got like a little diary latch on it. And
it was definitely from the sale section of Barnes and Noble, because I cannot count how many journals I've received over the years as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, you latch. Definitely pick this up at like Sanrio. Yeah, the baby little key that you could easily just break with your hands.
It's always like fake like weathered maps on the outside or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. So she sees the cloud book and it's. It's clear that this has some sort of magical property to it. And she's reading it. And as she says the name Windy, it sort of summons a tornado under her. And you kind of see this sort of alchemy circle beneath her. And the wind from the book kind of blows all the cards that were inside everywhere. And we're introduced to Cerberus. And it's this kind of, it looks like a mouse, even though it's supposed to be like a bear or a creature, kind of like a tiger.
Yeah, I think a lion, but it's such a generic, like stuffed toy looking thing that it could be a dog, a lion, a bear. It could be any of those things.
Right. Yeah. It's just it's a cute mascot character. And so she shakes him around like a toy because she thinks like, hey, where's the voice coming from out of this thing? And so we are introduced to him and he says that his name is Kerberos, the guardian beast of the seal of the cloud book.
The first thing that happens from there is so he explains what a guardian beast is. And he says, it's my job to protect the cards in this book from getting into trouble. And then he kind of like looks at the book and all the cards are gone and he just like, screams basically.
Yeah, this is a very cute segment, I think.
Sakura explains, he's like, oh, they all blew away, and he's like, what? Like, they what?
Mm-hmm.
Very,
and he's got a very Osaka accent as well, so she's like, yeah, you've got an Osaka accent. He's like, oh yeah, the book was in Osaka for a long time, so I picked up the accent.
And so like what I love about that is like the comedic timing is just, it's spot on. It's great.
It is.
Which I hope carries on throughout the show, but it definitely throughout the episode it carries on. So after this we cut forward and Sakura kind of like rushes through a dinner with her brother and she brings some dessert upstairs even to give to Kero. And he explains that he explains the history of the Clow cards basically, which they were made by an old wizard called Clow Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And every card is very powerful and almost nothing can stop them. And so Clow Reed finally like managed to capture them all in the book and he made Kero the guardian. But he's just been asleep for 30 years and to both his and her dismay, like he's exhausted. He's literally slept 30 years. And the actual sound that she was hearing was him snoring. That time, which again, like just kind of like a silly little touch, but I'm like, oh, okay, they're gonna have a sense of humor here. So
the sort of comedic relationship between these two is very good so far. I don't know if it keeps going with this, but it's like they play off each other very well,
right? Like this could have very little tweaking and just be a sitcom. And so Kero he summons, he does another like summon circle kind of thing, and deputizes her basically into being the person to find the cards, into being a card captor. And he grants her the wand that she saw in her dream, which is just like a pink rod with like a little like, I don't know, like a
beak on it.
Yeah, beak at the end, like, yeah. Some, like a little like wing kind of thing. And while this is happening though, like she points out, she's very reasonable about this, which just makes it funnier. Like she's just being kind of serious and reasonable. She's like, I'm an elementary school student. I can't do that. Yeah. Like, are you like, really? Like, come on.
She's like, asshole, I'm a fourth grader.
Like, which like, as a guy who loves shows about like, you know, a 14-year-old and a death robot that can end the world four times over, I love that they're aware that like this isn't right. Like,
mm-hmm. He's like, no, you'll be fine. Here you go.
So he's like, and even he puts it like, well, it was your fault anyway, so you get to fix it. And from there though, like there's a strong gust of wind that just like goes in through, you know, they feel through the window. There's like a giant bird. It looks like it's almost like a giant crane or something like that.
It looks like a Fearow. I thought it looked like a big Fearow Pokemon, yeah. But was like blue.
I got a little bit of, yeah, Fearow vibes, or like some kind of like a phoenix bird kind of thing. But yeah, so it flies by, it just like gusts everything, and Kiro points out that that's the fly card, which, you know, manifested in that form. And it's like, well, it's time to go captor him.
Hey, you're a card captor. Time to captor
some cards.
So because she's, you know, it's the middle of the night and she is a fourth grader, as we established, she is in her PJs and is rollerblading out to kind of catch this giant energy bird. And so to kind of manifest her power, she pulls out this little key, which is sort of like the beak of her rod, and it summons it harnesses her card captor ability. She tries to pull out the windy card while she's skating away, but she can't really get close to this. And so, once again, this fourth grader skates up a wall, which is like the equivalent of like a reservoir wall or a ditch. And rockets up and lands on this giant energy bird. And she kind of, when she's on top of it, she starts to use an incantation. And she kind of asks the windy card to kind of like, to bind this giant bird. And it works. It starts to bind the bird and it kind of slows it down. And then Sakura is able to say like, hey, return to what you were, like become a cloud card again, and hits the thing with her rod and it turns back into a card. Afterwards she's crying, understandably, because she's a fourth grader, at Kiro, because she's like, hey, I almost died, this card was way too strong. And to which Kiro replies like, if you thought that was bad, wait till you meet some of the stronger cards.
That's so messed up.
And it's like, bro, like, you slept for 30 years, so she's been alive for, like, 11. That's
so... And he's just so, he's so casual about it.
He's nonplussed at all. Yeah, he does not care. But after the close encounter with mortality aside, he's like, hey, why don't you try out the fly card and see how you like it? And so she pulls out the fly card, and it pretty much, what it does is it takes these her baton that she uses, and it makes these giant wings kind of spread out the back of it, and she sort of rides it like a witch would ride a broom. And that's where the episode ends. She's sort of seen flying over Japan on her, you know, her flying rod. That's where we cut to the ending song, which is Groovy by Kumi Hirose. Jorge, what do you think about this ending theme?
I thought it was fine. It was like just like this kind of like funky little like downbeat sort of ending. But I thought it was kind of cool because like the at least the animation side had like this minimalist art of Kiro like hopping around this like this tiny like orb, like planet, you know, because you see like the buildings rotating over everything.
Yeah, he's just walking. Yeah,
yeah, he's just like hopping, walking, and it reminded me of like Katamari Damacy, if you know, if you've played that, or if anyone's played that. Just between the
yeah, bro, I've played Katamari Damacy.
It's so, which is a wonderful game, wonderful game series, I should say, but it just immediately, you know, like the scale of it and the constant rotation, like either that or like Super Mario Galaxy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just it was very simple. I do think that I like this ending theme better than the OP, actually.
Oh wow.
I at first I was like, this is fine, and then once the English chorus kind of comes in, I was like, ooh, this is funky.
Yeah.
I can get down to this.
It's good. I think I have a little bit of just like a poppy, like, I don't know, like fanboy in me somewhere that, mm-hmm. which is ironic given like my usual taste in music is like heavier and angrier and scarier. But then, mm-hmm. then you have the like, catch me. Like I live for that shit too. Like it's, it's crazy, but
you're like an onion. You have layers.
I have layers.
Yeah. No, I liked it. What did you think of like the next episode preview though?
Oh, I thought that was kind of interesting. It just I'd be interested in seeing how it carries on in other episodes, because it's just Kiro's Corner, he calls it, and he just talks about or he announces that he's going to talk about aspects of the show, and in this particular one, he just kind of talks about the school uniforms that they wear, mm-hmm. at the school, and he's like, oh look how cute Sakura is, and here's the boys' uniform, and here's the color, and here's the like logo of the school, and. Yeah.
I liked that a lot. I mean, I think that one of the things that Japanese animation has over American animation is character design. And the fact that they kind of are bringing that to the forefront and they're explaining the thought that goes into even minimal things like school uniform designs. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's once again, like, effort is being made with this cartoon. Like, it's, you know, it's not just, let's get this out as soon as possible, and you know, who cares about details?
It brought me back to Gaugaigar, actually, with which I want to say the episode we reviewed for the pod had this, but they I think it's either before or after the episode preview, they have a little flash. It's not animated or anything. It's just a little flash of a still. Mm-hmm. And you get this like card that says like, this is the key to victory. And it's a weapon or like a tool or a vehicle or a place or something that is essential to the next episode, but it's, mm-hmm. not obvious like what function it is. So it's almost like a little teaser.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But it's usually like a really cool design. You're basically being treated to like some like concept art or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it felt like a more fleshed out version of that to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's more of like a, instead of just a little preview, it's like a full on like set piece for this one little aspect of the show.
Yeah, like let's flesh out the world of Cardcaptor Sakura.
Yeah, definitely. What were your thoughts on this episode?
I thought the writing was great. There was also like a surprising amount of slapstick and like humor, and like the timing of the humor was great. That's always something tricky, both in terms of both just like quality and of like cultural differences for humor to work, but it really just worked.
No, you're right. I mean, yeah, it's you have to deal with the comedic timings for a certain culture, which might be different from your own. And I think especially the banter between Kiro and Sakura, like it was still played off. I was like, oh, this is, they're being funny.
Mm-hmm. It felt really like universal humor. Like it was great. I don't know if that was the intention or if it was just like a lucky coincidence, but because there is anime that's apparently hilarious, but it just doesn't work for an audience without that context of like, you know, Japanese culture or like history or comedic formulas, right. And stuff.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, other than that, that was like wholesome, cute, charming as hell.
It's very cute. Yeah, it's very charming. Yeah, you're right, it is very charming. Do you think that you would watch more of this in the Japanese version?
I'd be open to it. It was definitely for me. It was interesting seeing the other side of the coin of like the American version, even though I barely remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I I don't know. I'd be down to watch it. I'd be down to watch a little more.
But you're not saying you're like you feel driven to do it on your own. Like you would just do it.
Yeah, I'd be up for it if like a couple of people are gonna do it and it's like, oh hey, like let's watch this and do like a, I don't know, like an anime watching book club kind of thing. I'm not immediately like I gotta watch the next one, but I think that's more of like my tastes and just having like other shows I wanna watch first. But I definitely put it on the list like down the line, which surprised me because it didn't seem like the kind of show I'd be into.
Right. No, I agree with you. I think it's there's definitely more meat on the bone compared to like if you were just a person who watched Cardcaptors as a kid. Mm-hmm. So I am not a person who is a fan of Cardcaptors, but if I were and I watched this now, I'd be like, okay, now I want to watch this.
Right.
But as a person who is not that, I would say like I appreciate this for what it is. It's Studio Madhouse, so of course like quality is, you know, very high tier. I just don't see myself finding the time to watch this in you know, when I've got other anime to watch, or you know, Tarkov to play. So I don't know.
Right. It's not a function of the show itself. It's just it doesn't go that extra mile to like reprioritize what I want to watch, but it comes close to that. Because I'm definitely curious. I'm like, how does this end? What do the other cards do? I didn't make this comparison earlier, but it's almost like that first season of Pokemon where you didn't know it would just be a show that lasts forever and nothing changes or matters.
Right.
Where there's still that faint glimmer of like, oh, this might be a story with like a beginning and an end. It kind of reminded me of that a bit, you know, between the like gotta catch them all factor.
Yes, definitely.
And the just like personal growth journey sort of thing. So
yeah, I definitely feel like it does hit that sort of Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon like niche, but with more like more world building, more emphasis on story rather than like, hey, we're going to show you all the cards that you can have in real life or all the Pokemon that you can catch in this Game Boy game.
It's because it wasn't a toy commercial first. It was a show and it, you know, had merchandise and whatever, but it's the reverse of those kinds of programs.
Right. So would you say it held up and would you recommend this to a friend?
Oh yeah, both. Absolutely. Okay. I thought it looked gorgeous. You know, other than the little things where you know how animation has progressed, like I thought it looked beautiful and like still held up visually. Story-wise, like if it's the kind of thing that someone's if I knew someone's tastes aligned with this kind of storytelling, I would absolutely recommend it. It was quality. Like something can be not your cup of tea 100%, but you can still see that this is like a good example of what it is.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, like if you have a friend who likes the magical girl genre but somehow hasn't watched Cardcaptor Sakura, it is definitely like something that they should watch.
Absolutely.
It represents the genre well, and it's got a high degree of execution in terms of, you know, aesthetic and production. So like, yeah, if you like the genre, you should definitely watch Cardcaptor Sakura. That being said, Jorge, as you know, we do have our episode rating system. So based on 1 to 5 Cerberus body pillows, what would you give season 1, episode 1 of Cardcaptor Sakura?
I'm gonna have to go ahead and give it a 3.5.
Okay.
Which, you know, like that's pretty up there. It's pretty good. This is gonna sound weird, mm-hmm. but what they're setting up, and just like how good, like it to me, it was just a first episode. Like it's a pretty basic first episode, but it's a good one. It's a really good one. So I feel like if this was a show that I would watch to the end, there's definitely gonna be like a 5 pillow episode somewhere in there. Just from I just feel that, you know, like I know that's really kind of a silly thing to like predict, but I feel like the quality is there, the potential's there. I don't know. Maybe I'm setting myself up for disappointment if I ever do watch it. But mm-hmm. but yeah. So 3.5.
Okay. Yeah, no. I think I'm going to go with you on this one. I think it's definitely a 3.5. It's, you know, I would feel that if I gave it a 3, which is like a middle of the road, it'd be kind of doing it a disservice once, you know, considering I've praised the animation production and the comedy of it. So, yeah, I don't think that I could just give it a 3. I would give it a 3.5, like almost 4. Just because it's like there's something more here for this anime. And, you know, whether or not I'm going to watch this and figure out that it's a really, really great anime, like I know that there's something special here. So, yeah, I also would give it a 3.5.
Yeah, if this had aired when, or if I had watched this rather, when I had a lot more free time on my plate, it would have been worth like to continue going for sure. So I would have been hooked. So absolutely.
Yeah. So that's it for the episode for the day, guys. If you want to follow us on Instagram or Twitter, we are both on at Aging Otakus. You can find us there. If you'd like to find me on Twitter, I am on as at Chambray_Poppy. P-A-P-I, like dad in Spanish. Jorge, where can they find you?
You can find me at Jorge Labrador. That's J-O-R-G-E, and then Labrador like the retriever.
If you want to follow us on both of those social medias, we will let you know what our episodes that will be uploaded will be, as well as what episodes we'll be covering the week following. And if you want to maybe follow us on iTunes, you can give us a 5-star review with a recommendation for what kind of anime you'd like to have us cover, and we will consider any 5-star rating. And that's just sort of a way for us to sort of shamelessly, you know, fluff our rating system, but it's also a way for you to, you know, let us know what you think we should cover in the future. And yeah, if you follow us on Spotify, I don't think there's a way to rate us, but you know, subscribing is great and I would appreciate that, and I know Jorge would as well. But until next week, that's been our show. So take it easy, guys.
Bye.